Welcome to the Art Within podcast, hosted by filmmakers Houston Coley and Nate Shepard. This is season one, cultivating community in the digital era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Art Within podcast. I'm Nate, and I'm joined here with my co-host Houston.
Hello. Welcome back.
And we are going to continue our conversation. Today, we've got some interesting things to talk about with the creative collaborative process, the ins and outs of that. But before we get into that, we've actually got some good engagement on some of our previous episodes of this podcast. And there was actually a really great comment that came in. I believe it was on your Patreon, Houston.
Yeah.
That was just kind of pushing back a little bit on some of the things we talked about in the last episode. If you haven't listened to it, the last episode was about just talking about the power of place and the physical locations that we're in and how that might foster or inhibit community and things like that. And I spent quite a bit of time just lamenting the lack of natural light in a lot of these spaces and how I moved from one house to another just to be able to have more natural light. And so there was some, comments that I had made just about the historical perspective that admittedly I am not a historian, so definitely was maybe speaking a little out of turn that way. But Houston, if you just want to go ahead and read the comment, I think it'll hopefully make a little bit more sense what we're talking about, and then we can respond a little bit to it.
Yeah, sure. So, going forward, I think we're going to be trying to include some more thoughts and responses to things people have said in between episodes if we have time at the beginning of some of these episodes, especially if there's a particularly thoughtful response like this one. But I am going to be including time codes in the description of the episodes if you want to skip ahead to the meat of what the episode is about. So just feel free to know that. So this comment comes from Carlo Copier, who's a guy on my Patreon. He's been around for a while. He's a really thoughtful guy. And he said, "While many of the points you guys raised were very interesting and worthwhile, I think that you might be too quick to attribute the lack of natural light in some homes to something so philosophical. While it may be true that the architect simply didn't care about letting in natural light as much, they likely had predominantly practical considerations. The problem with big windows is that you lose a lot of heat through them in the winter, so typically only rich people have houses with those really big windows. If you go back to the 20s and 30s and look at the working class homes, you see that barely have any windows at all, and that the windows that they do have are usually extremely small by today's standards. Back then, the only heat that you would get was that of the kitchen stove, meaning that it was often truly cold in the houses back then. On that note, I think it's also important that you do not romanticize the past. The modern age is truly fantastic if you consider how high our standards of living have become. To say that there are all these things that the modern man has supposedly lost is a bit unfair to our time period, in my opinion. As for community, the modern age truly excels at this too, in my opinion. If you compare it to today, the worlds of the people who lived mere generations ago were extremely small. People would only really know the people from their village, and when someone would leave, most likely they would never see them again."
Yeah, and this is just such a great comment, Carlo, and I really appreciate you taking the time to write it out, and to do so in such a gracious way is just really helpful. And yeah, that's something that I think we both value, both you and I, Houston,
yeah,
of just trying to foster this ability to have conversations and to disagree and to explore things without immediately jumping to conclusions. And so when I first read your comment here, Carlo, I was like, oh, man, I don't see anything in there that I disagree with. I think it's very resonant with just being, I appreciate the pushback because I think these are things that sometimes I forget. There is a tendency to, sort of idealize the past, and,
yeah,
and I think sometimes I fall into that. And so, I really appreciate the comment. I appreciate the tone of the comment. And if you have thoughts or, pushback, it's okay to disagree with what we're saying.
Yeah.
Our goal here is not at all to be the answer men for the world's toughest questions.
Yeah.
We just want to have conversations and we want to explore it. And so I really appreciate that. I don't know, Houston, if you have any additional comments there, but.
Yeah, I really appreciated the thoughtfulness of the comment as well. I think it's a good reminder because, especially going forward, there may be some temptation for both of us to glamorize the past. And undoubtedly, there are things that I do believe that we have lost in the modern era that may have been more significant, may have been a little bit more easy to find back then. But there are also things that were really hard back then that we are not, touching on. I would push back a little bit in that I agree with everything that Carlo said. I thought it was a really perceptive critique. I would just say that I don't know if you were necessarily saying that, like, all houses back in, you know, 200 years ago before that had a lot of natural light or had big windows. I think you were more commenting on the way that houses several generations ago may have been built to be more particularly suited for the location that they are meant to be rooted in. Like now we have that kind of sense of copy paste cookie cutter houses that could go anywhere and be anywhere. But you were sort of commenting on the way that, like, you know, the modern house that you had lived in before your current house had windows, but none of them faced the river. And I think it is true that perhaps some of the houses and dwelling places and places in general in a previous generation may have not been quite as industrialized, may have not been quite as like, oh, this is just, you know, the template that we use, and may have been more like, well, we're using the trees that are found here to make this house, and we're building it in a way that will be suited for the place that it is located. And then as far as, you know, relationships in the modern age, yeah, I think this is going to be something that we're exploring a lot throughout the podcast, because I think it's so true. Like the fact that we are able to even have this podcast and even have this community and have people listen to us is such a gift of the modern age, right? You and I live in different states. Sometimes we live in different countries, and yet we're able to communicate regularly and put our voices out there for people to hear. The only thing that I would question is, yes, we have more capacity for a broader pool of relationships across the world, and we have more capacity to keep in touch with people when we're not with them, you know, physically. But do we have actually deeper relationships now? I don't know. I think, you know, maybe there might be a sense of that if you had a smaller pool of relationships that were kind of you were limited by, you might actually have deeper relationships with those people. Whereas, you know, now I think we're maybe spread a little bit thinner. But I also don't want to glamorize that, because, you know, it's like, well, maybe the small pool of relationships was something that, you know, was a big struggle for a lot of people back in past times. You might have been like, oh, I hate that the only people I'm able to talk to are these people in my small village. So, like, there's a give and take there, I think.
I wonder if there's a bit of a both and, too, of, you know, part of what we're doing in looking at the past is just saying, are there aspects that maybe we should have held on to or that we can reclaim or revitalize in the modern era? Because I don't think, if you really look at all points in history, for certain people, different times in history are better or worse. But generally speaking, for the human race, I think there's always, you're going to find a little bit of a, we did that right and we were not doing that right.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of our hope with this is just to examine the past, examine other groups, examine, you know, some of these things to see if we can learn from them. And this is actually a good segue into our topic today, because I think the, you know, we're hoping to discuss a bit about, you know, the creative collaboration and how do you work well with others in trying to create things and so forth. And I think that that's something that is both exactly what you just said. The modern era of the internet and the tools and resources that are available as filmmakers, you know, we could spend a whole episode talking about new filmmaking tools that we have that are absolutely insane, that do in many ways allow us to collaborate in ways that have, that, you know, would never have been possible even 5-10 years ago. But at the same time, there's, it seems really hard to still to like actually get people together, at least in my experience. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's just I'm not good at drawing people together. I don't know.
And
I
me think, also.
Yeah, and a lot of people that I've talked to. Yeah, so I feel like we, yeah, there's so many aspects to that. So I guess I'll put it back to you, Houston, as a, in the form of a question, is kind of what has been your experience as far as times when you've been able to successfully collaborate with other people and times when maybe you haven't found as much. And I know you also asked the question on Twitter, like gathering some ideas from other people. And so I don't know if you just want to spend some time reflecting on just the overall creative collaboration, getting people to work together, the ins and outs, the positives and negatives. What wisdom do you have to share with us?
Not very much wisdom. I this is actually one of the episode topics that I feel the most just lost at how to understand. And it's kind of why I want to put it out there as a topic that I hope that we wrestle with throughout, you know, a lot of this show, is kind of the enigma of what is creative community? How do we capture it? How do we embody it? And I have all these ideals in my head, which we might get to later, of kind of great examples of community that I've studied and read about and watched that kind of embody what I would love creative community to be. But thus far in my life, I haven't experienced that level of creative community. And so it's always sort of chasing after something that I hope to have one day that I've not had. So I put out a question on Twitter to sort of, wrestle with this. I also put it on the Substack and, all the usual outlets to ask our discussion questions.
By the way, if you're interested in engaging in the conversation as a podcast listener,
yes,
you can go to our Substack, artwithin.substack.com, or Houston's Twitter, which is twitter.com/artwithinpod, I think.
Yeah, and they also just recently on Substack, this week actually, between our previous episode and now, have allowed people to engage in the Substack chat threads through the website, not just through the app. It used to be had to download the app to do it. Now you can do it through the website. So that's exciting. So I asked anyway, have you ever had the experience of working with a group of other people to make something? What did you make? Was it difficult to get people to commit or work together? What was hard and what was good? And one of the responses said, this feels like a college application question, which is true.
Yes.
But I got a lot of really lovely responses talking about people's experiences. Most of the people who follow me are in the film world. And so a lot of people talking about film projects that they worked on, theater projects that they worked on, trying to get people together to work on a common project. The general sentiment between many of the comments, like almost all of them, was A, it was really hard to get people to show up. And I got ghosted a lot. And I got, sort of people flaking out on me a lot. And B, it was hard because there were a lot of competing visions for what this should be. And those were sort of the main categories of response, I think. There were also a lot of really, there were several responses of people saying, yeah, I did, and it was awesome. Like, we did like a 48-hour film competition, and it was a really cool example of everyone working together and that sort of thing. But a lot of it did tend to also fall into that, like, yeah, it wasn't quite as great as I hoped it would be, which is interesting to hear. I don't know what responses you got to the question.
Yeah, I mean, I admittedly got quite a bit less response on my question this time than the last time I asked a question. And I'm not sure how much of that is just algorithms, or I asked a bad question, or people just didn't know exactly how to engage with the question. I mean, it's a little bit more of a niche question, I guess.
Yeah.
I tried to be more broad of just, have you ever tried to work with other people? Have you ever tried to, not even specific to the creative thing. But I did have a couple of, I think, really thoughtful and insightful comments. My friend Amanda just expressed some of her experience of trying to get some people together. And again, that same thing of everyone canceling last minute and trying to get the schedules aligned and whatever. And she sort of, at the end, has a bit of a resolution of, part of me feels you just got to plan it and see who comes.
Yeah.
And this has definitely been true, since I remember, particularly when I had, I would do college ministry. So I used to be a pastor and would, sometimes work with local college students as well. And there was sort of this principle of, when you're working with youth that are still in their parents' home, you can plan something and then the parent will say, we're going to make this happen. But as soon as they're out of the home, then they don't have that. And so there's, a lot of, college aged people are learning how to have follow through and figuring out how to prioritize certain things on the calendar and whatever. And so what we learned as we would open our house to college students is you have to be prepared for nobody showing up. You have to have a thick skin about it and not burn out, really quickly because you're so miffed that nobody came. And for me, a lot of times it was just like, if one person comes, then that's the person you get to hang out with. And so there is a little bit of that. Like, I think so much of it, of the failure, quote unquote, to collaborate well is actually this expectation, this sort of like, it's all going to go this way and it's all going to be this kind of wonderful experience. And, I have this conversation even just last night. I was chatting with my parents a little bit about just the challenges of community, that you don't get to have a genuine, authentic community and skip over the messy part of it and the frustrating part and the, annoying aspects of the people that you're with. And part of it is you begin to realize that you're actually one of the annoying ones. I've had this experience when I've tried to, the only times when I've been, again, quote unquote, successful in creative collaboration have been when I've been kind of a dictatorial director, when I've been really sort of everybody's got to do this, and I'm like easily angered or whatever. Like I'm just in this zone that's very controlling, and yeah, you get stuff done, but nobody has fun with it, and it's, you know, and so I think there is some of it that just has to do with letting go of your ego. And actually, my friend Zach had a great comment as well, where he kind of related to this, where he said, creative ideas tend to be too closely tied to a person's identity. It's hard to let go. So I think that some of it is like, you know, especially in the world of film. Film is so interesting because it's like on the spectrum of creative endeavors. Now in the sort of modern era of technology, I think you can do a lot more as a solo film, like literally solo filmmaker. You're running the camera, you're acting on the camera, you're doing all of it, which you can do, but is very difficult and frustrating often. And so film is really, I think, at its best typically with a team of sorts. People in front of the camera, people behind the camera, people, you know, editing, all of that type of stuff. And then on the other end of that, you know, spectrum, maybe you could argue, is like writing. So obviously, if you're a good writer, you're going to actually have good editors and work with publishers and all these. So there's still other people involved in the process.
Yeah.
But it's much more about you sort of being the central driving force, because you don't need another person. And in many ways, you can't have another person typing on the keyboard at the same time you are. You know, obviously, people write books together and so forth. And so I think there is this interesting thing where you know, and I've experienced this in my own filmmaking, but I also, you know, you hear it a lot from other filmmakers. You know, you do behind the scenes, or especially for indie filmmakers, where it's like, I had to learn to let go. I had this idea and it never turns out the way that I had in my head. And you just have to be okay with that. And so I think there's a good part of the failure to collaborate creatively comes from ego, comes from this obsession. And you know, us creatives, we tend to be this way, right? We have visions and we have just dreams and desires, and it's gotta, you know, and it's you know, we could talk about, I forget what that term is, auteur.
You know what I'm talking about?
Auteur theory.
I learned recently it's outer, I think.
Outer. I don't know how to say it. I have a friend named Artur, so that confuses me more. So I don't know if you just want to explain what that is, and then maybe even
you have some reflections
on that as well.
Which the idea of you know, the kind of the singular artist, the person who is able to make something and it's entirely their vision and they're kind of the sole creative responsible for it. Even if it's a film and lots of crew are involved, it feels like kind of the singular result of one individual. That's kind of the idea of auteur theory, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know if you is, you know, generally speaking, I think there's sort of a value for collaboration, where typically somebody who thinks that they're, you know, most people probably don't want to work for a director who is like, it's all this vision. Although sometimes I know you've expressed that there are some exceptions to that rule of whether
Jim Cameron.
So yeah, maybe
but
the
I actually
movies.
Don't know if I would want to work for Jim Cameron as much as I love the guy. So it is. Yeah.
you're on a familiar level with him. You just call him Jim now instead of James. The rest of us call him James, but you know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you have more thoughts on just like what the ins and outs of the sort of creative collaborative process, or if we want to talk just a little bit about some of, you know, I know you've been inspired by a couple of groups in particular.
Yeah.
And I don't actually know, you know, I'm familiar with one of them, but I'm not super familiar with kind of the ins and outs of all of them. And so maybe just spend a little bit of time here talking about those groups and what is so inspirational to you about them. And maybe we can glean some things from how they approach things.
Well, I wanted to title this episode Inklings, Imagineers, and ILM, partly because it's great alliteration, but also because those are three groups that have inspired me greatly in my life towards creative collaboration. The Inklings are the group that C.S. Lewis, the author of Narnia, and J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Lord of the Rings, founded, that would meet once a week in a pub called the Eagle and Child in Oxford. And many of them were writers and scholars and people who lived in that Oxford area who would come together consistently to just share their work together. And they would, Tolkien would be reading the latest chapter that he'd written of Lord of the Rings. Lewis would be reading the latest chapter he'd written of Narnia. Other people would be sharing the poetry that they'd written. They would smoke pipes together and drink beer together. And then they would talk about their art. And it's kind of held up, especially within the Christian world, but I think even within the broader literature world, as like an iconic example of creative community and the way that like we wouldn't have the Lord of the Rings if Tolkien didn't exist in the community of the Inklings, because they encouraged him to keep going with it. And we wouldn't have Narnia if Tolkien had not convinced Lewis to keep going with it. And they both had really significant problems with each other's work and would often give each other constructive criticism about it, and also just kind of accept that like, oh, this just isn't really my thing. Like, like Tolkien was like, Narnia just isn't really my thing. And Lewis was like, I don't know if Lord of the Rings is really my thing, but keep going with it, please. And I'll keep giving you constructive criticism. And so it was a really, really profound example of that kind of community. Now, granted, that is not exactly the same as kind of what we've talked about in the past few minutes of like making a film together. This is sort of a bunch of people making their own things, but sharing them regularly and gaining something from that relationship. The other two groups are a bit closer to that film idea. Imagineers are the sort of imaginative engineers who work on Disney World parks, Disney theme parks. And they've always been a huge inspiration to me in terms of many of them, especially at the start of Disney, came from vastly different backgrounds. Some of them came from the film world. Many of them did, and sort of practical like production design kind of stuff. Many of them came from the theater world. Some of them came from the engineering world and sort of the technology world. And then they were able to create a Disney world. And that was a phenomenal, you know, I find it a phenomenal example of human creativity and the things that we can do when we incorporate all of these different creative skill sets and artistries and crafts into something that sort of expresses so many different things about human creativity. So I've always loved that. And then ILM is Industrial Light and Magic. They're a very famous VFX house, which I had not, they haven't been like a longtime hero kind of thing of mine. I've always thought they were an amazing company. But this past summer, Disney released a docuseries on Disney Plus called Light and Magic, which is I think it's 6-episode docuseries chronicling kind of the history of ILM. They started and were founded with the original Star Wars trilogy by George Lucas. And so Lucas founded them, and they had to come up with all of these crazy innovative solutions to do the VFX for Star Wars. And it kind of started in a basement and then eventually grew into this giant VFX house that's—
And for those who are unfamiliar with VFX, it means visual effects. So all of the fantastical elements that you see on screen that maybe were not exactly, you know, they didn't they didn't actually have a spaceship as large as the Death Star. They had to
and so they're
come up with creative solution for that.
Models and blowing them up, and eventually they are coming up with— this is the really cool thing about the series, which I highly recommend on Disney Plus, is that it really shows how they go from this sort of blowing up models into in a basement into like accidentally inventing Pixar. like because of Terminator 2 and The Abyss for James Cameron, they have to come up with these like CGI models for like the idea of a CGI character is kind of first toyed with by them. And then that gives us like Gollum and Avatar and all of these crazy things. And it's all kind of just the result of experimentation and experimentation in community. And a lot of it is like, There's an anecdote where George Lucas is like, he tells the stop motion guy, is there a way that you could put the Tauntaun in this helicopter footage of the snow that we have? You know, so it's like in the wide shot of Hoth in Star Wars. And he goes, I really don't think so. Like that, we don't have the technology for that, like to track that onto that. And George just goes, just think about it. And he thinks about it for a few days, and he tosses around the idea with his colleagues who are also sort of have their own fields of expertise. And then eventually they figure out how to do it. And then it like changes VFX forever. And so it's just so many, you know, maybe these are high ideals of Imagineers and ILM and the Inklings, but they've been like formative, imaginative, you know, examples of community that I've always kind of striven for. Striven? Is that a word? Strived
Strove,
for?
Strove?
And I think it's important to have role models like that, but also important not to be too unrealistic about it. There's a book called Bandersnatch. I think it's called J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and the Creative Collaboration of the Inklings. I've thought about in the past if we would do a book club for this podcast, that I think that would be the book that would be the best to read. It's a really, really in-depth look at the Inklings and also at what made them so flourishing as a creative community. And there's so many things. Like we could spend multiple episodes talking about it. We could spend an entire book club talking about it. But I did last night go back and read the conclusion chapter where she kind of summarizes some of her thoughts. And one of the things that stuck out to me was, A, she notes it's important to start small. With the Inklings, it kind of, it grew out of this dyad of Lewis and Tolkien, who were just really, really passionate artists and would have just hung out as friends regardless. But they started sort of inviting people into that. And so it started small and started with just two people meeting and then three people meeting and then four people meeting. And that was a big part of its success, was that they didn't sort of need to have a bunch of people show up for it to be considered a successful meeting, right? And then the other thing I think was this sense of proximity and consistency, right? I mean, they all lived in Oxford. Many of them were involved in Oxford University, and they would meet consistently once a week, and then eventually it kind of morphed into twice a week, and then they would have like an Inklings lunch together on Mondays, and then they'd have kind of the Inklings writing sharing on like Friday nights, and then sometimes they'd also just meet for drinks on Wednesday nights. But kind of and I'm like, man, that's a lot of time to spend with your British male colleagues just talking about your work, talking about Beowulf. But I think it does communicate something about like the power of consistency with like seeing the same people regularly at the same time and being able to count on that. And I experienced that even at LaBrie. There was a book club on Monday mornings, not a book club, a writing club, where we were able to kind of share our writing every week of like what we had been writing, fiction and stuff. And that was a really important thing for me, was like, oh, I can write something this week and I'll know that I'll have a place to share it and talk about it on Monday. And sort of that inspired me to continue writing and to even write things that might excite the people who I was going to share it with. So these are just a bunch of stray observations about community crammed into one long rant. But all of this is still a bit of an enigma to me, but I think it might be something that we hope to explore as the podcast goes on, of like what makes communities like that possible and are they possible? I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course I have thoughts. but I think there are a couple things that stand out to me. One, I think a lot of times we'll look at these heroes of ours, you know, these ILM creating these amazing visual effects and accidentally creating Pixar, and you know, it's sort of the quintessential Steve Jobs in the garage, or I don't know, everybody started in a garage for some reason and then made this multi-billion dollar company. And I think sometimes we get caught in, you sort of have this like romanticism about the product, which is, you know, or what you see now, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Yeah. And there's two problems with that. One is that at the most successful, a lot of these groups and these realities and these experiences are not, it's not as though all these people have transcended human suffering and have now achieved enlightenment and are this, like, living this completely fundamentally different reality. To some extent, maybe there's truth to that. But a lot of times it's still frustrating people, you know, it's still arguing over this and stressing over that. And anybody who's worked on a film knows that when you're actually working on it, you're miserable. There's no way around it. You're miserable. That's just what, you know, you put yourself through that misery and then you finish it and then you get addicted. And then it's a bit like giving birth. So I've been told that the pain of giving birth, eventually you forget it because of the euphoria of having the child. Yeah. And so then, you know, that's why you then have more than one child. But I think there is this reality of like, we forget how much pain and suffering goes into all, you know, and a lot of these people even today are still, though we see them on the outside as being successful, they're still struggling and dealing with human problems like any of us. But I think also they didn't know it was going to be that big. You know, a lot of these groups, it's like they didn't realize how formative, you know, I don't know if Tolkien knew how formative his writings would be to the sci-fi fantasy genre. I don't think Lewis necessarily had an idea of how fundamentally he would change the ways that Christians talk and engage with philosophy and theology and what, you know, it's like these people who ended up being very instrumental. You know, at the time it was just, you were hanging out with your buddies who were doing the same things. And so I think some of it is that we often are striving to be like the most prolific and the most whatever. We're trying to copy paste what we see on the surface of somebody that's really inspirational to us without realizing how normal and just, this is literally just another human being. And so I guess it's a both end of saying, just start with what you have, start with who you have, start with where you are, and also realizing that even if you achieve that amazing quote-unquote success that you're striving for, you very likely will not be any happier than you are now. And so learning to make peace with where you are, with who you're with, and realizing that there's actually a lot of beautiful opportunities to collaborate. I live, again, I live in small town America, and you know, you would think in many ways I'm like the only, for a while I was like, I'm the only filmmaker up here. Mm-hmm. And then over time you start to realize actually there are other people. And now one of my better friends here is another videographer and filmmaker who has a thriving business downtown. And we've talked about how we could approach our businesses, because we both do video for hire, in an area where there's maybe less jobs out there than maybe, you know, another place would have. And we could look at that and say, let's fight for the same scrap. Let's, any job you take is a job you're taking away from me. But both of us, for whatever reason, we made the decision that, nope, you are not a competitor, you are a collaborator. And have decided to actually lean into friendship and draw, you know, we borrow equipment from each other. I've given him jobs that I didn't want to do before, you know, like, and as a result, I think there's a natural ability then to collaborate. And it's not necessarily like, wow, I found the next George Lucas or the next whatever. I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know how successful we're going to be. But I think there's this beauty in just being, in realizing who you're with. And you're like, yeah, if you're paying attention, there are some really creative and collaborative people kind of everywhere. And, I, you know, that's an oversimplification. Obviously, there's a lot of challenges to every community. But again, you would think in sort of rural America, which is not necessarily known for its arts community, arts scene, that there's actually quite a bit. You know, we'll do another episode, you know, talking more in depth on that. But yeah, just work with who you're with and expect it to be a long, arduous process sometimes. People aren't going to show up. How many times I've planned something locally where sometimes you get a big group and it's a great night and everybody loves it, and then you can't seem to get those people to come back. And it's not because they don't want to. And, you know, we're running out of time on the podcast here, but there's this whole other element of just time management and the overwhelm of life and the tyranny of the urgent, where we have to prioritize, you know, or we don't know how to kind of keep our priorities in check to be able to allow for space for some of these things to flourish, because we're all kind of in survival mode. And so, again, maybe that's another episode, but there's just a lot that we could talk about this, you know, topic of creative collaboration. I don't know if you have more reflections on that or if we wrap it up here.
Yeah, I think definitely there is a sense of, and so much of this, I feel a bit of disjointedness in this episode in sort of the way that, you know, I don't know if all of these examples of community with the Inklings and Imagineers and then also people's kind of film projects and all that stuff, I don't know if they all are exactly the same thing. And so I think there's, and I don't even know, not that our job is to explain everything or justify things or sort of give you a solution to everything, but I don't even know where to start yet in terms of responding to, you know, one of the big problems that people mentioned as of people not showing up, right? How do you gain more consistency with like people showing up and doing things together? Maybe part of it is like the way that our world is built now sort of influences us against that, in sort of car dependence, and like you have to drive to go to a thing to do a thing rather than like living at the same college together and you can just go to the pub and walk there every week, right? And that sort of stuff. But that's also a bit defeatist too, because it's like, oh well, that's just not the world we live in, and I want to be someone who suggests real solutions that I don't have right now. I don't know if people will give some thoughts about that, but also I think there is definitely a value in starting small, in just trying to have some consistency of community, even if it's just you and one other person or you and two other people. And that is where I meant to play this at the start of the episode, but now I actually think it might actually work at the end of the episode. I received a message from a friend of mine named Camilla, an audio message response to our previous episode this past week. You can send audio messages at speakpipe.com/artwithinpod. And she talked about how after listening to our previous episode, she was inspired to try to open her home to her neighbors and do something really brave in that. So I will play a bit of her message and then we might kind of wrap it up.
So the final story that you were sharing about that town or city that they're making, or community place that they're making, where it's very organic and all that stuff that you were talking about in the end, at the end of the episode. That was very fascinating to me that you were sharing about that. Like, oh my gosh, seriously. I just moved myself and, you know, I'm in a new apartment, obviously. And I just had this thought the other day of just like, hey, this is very un-Swedish as far as I know. I would just put up a newly moved in person. What do you say in English? I don't know. Inflyttning in Swedish, we would say. I'm new to the building, and then just like offering people to drop by, like having a spot of like 2 hours or whatnot. I don't know, on a Friday or whatever, or like Tuesday, whatnot. And just like, yeah, if you want to come by, just say hi and say hi. You're most welcome. I'll keep some pastry, you know, just something very simple, but just like as an opportunity to just quote unquote get to know the neighbors and then take it from there. But then I was like, I don't know. I was just starting to think about that and like how that's maybe considered quote unquote weird, at least in Sweden. But then I was like, no, you'll be you, Camilla. Like, you should do that if you want to. And so then I've just been thinking of, okay, I have it in my mind, or I have it in the back there, and then just like, God, let's collab in this if it's something that would be cool. And then listening to your convo there, just in the end there, just made me like, that's it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to put that up there where everybody can see it. And then if anyone shows up, great. If nobody did, well, at least that was myself and offered and was hospitable. And who knows, maybe someone at least says afterwards, like, hey, I saw that, I couldn't make it, but cool that you did that. Well, maybe nothing happens. At least I'm doing something to live that out, which I want for myself in my life, in a sense. And so that's where it was interesting with you talking about that place, because it's designed to create that sort of space, but you can't do it without like people engaging and people being vulnerable and people really, it's not a given. You have to take actions yourself as well. Yeah. Anyway, that was dope. Like all of it, it was just dope, dope, dope. Thank you for being hospitable in sharing with love your thoughts and receive just that. Like, thank you. I feel that warmth. I feel that like glowing in my heart. And so just receive that, and not in a way that makes you feel like, oh, I got to perform better or like the same next episode. Just be you. That's the beauty. So anyway, thank you.
So yeah, I was really encouraged by that message and her kind of bravery to put herself out there and do something, even if only one person shows up. I think it was really powerful. And I think sometimes we have this image of like, oh, creative community needs to be, I have a crew of 20 people and they all have their individual job and they're all doing this massive production together. And maybe that's needed sometimes. Maybe you need that for the project that you're making, and maybe it's really hard to come by that. But I also think that small community is just as meaningful and can actually be more intimate and more, you know, more relational ultimately. And it does require that sort of bravery and vulnerability to what you said at the start of the episode. Put yourself out there even if no one shows up to the event. And I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Just a quick thought that, again, maybe we'll get into it more on a later episode, but I've had a number of experiences in my community here where I had a dream of a stage that I wanted to play on or an opportunity that I wanted to have. And a lot of those dreams I've been able to accomplish, but I've realized in that process where, you know, like our local college, I was like, I want to play a show on this stage at some point. And I ended up being able to do that a number of times, but it wasn't because I was somehow now this impressive, amazing person that you just couldn't pass me up. I'm still kind of struggling to find my footing in the community and you know, in that way. But what it was it was a natural outworking of relationship. I knew the theater manager and we were like, let's do a thing. And so much of those great opportunities actually are born out of genuine relationship. And so just focus on building relationships rather than trying to accomplish your big project. Be patient. Eventually, maybe you'll be able to get to that project, but also you're still you. You're still a valuable human being if you never accomplish that amazing project. And so don't put your worth in that either. you know, I know I'm being very prescriptive right now, but I'm talking to myself, right? Like this is, these are all things that I tell myself to be very, in order to be healthy and successful in my career. And so I guess I'll put it to our podcast listeners again, definitely with this topic, we both Houston and I are trying our best to understand it and to grow in this. I feel like I've learned a lot, but I still, to this day, plan events and one or nobody shows up. And so what have been some of your experiences? And I want to focus more on the positive of what has worked. So if you want to leave us a message of this is something we tried and here's what seemed to work, or we calibrated this many times and then this is what actually seemed to stick. Or if you do have some additional thoughts as to what some of these barriers are, just identifying barriers to make it easier to overcome so that we can start to cultivate these kinds of communities as well. So find us on Substack and Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Facebook and Instagram and I don't know,
There will be a discussion thread, post-episode discussion thread on the Substack, which you can now access on the website. So that's exciting. And if you want to send any audio message to speakpipe.com/artwithinpod, you don't even need an account. It's super easy to do it. So, it'd be cool if we got some audio messages that we could play in the future with people's experiences with this kind of stuff. And I think that's pretty much it. We're looking forward to next week's episode.
Yeah, sounds good. So thanks everybody for tuning in and listening, and we'll catch you next week.
All right. See y'all next week.